So welcome, everyone. We appreciate you attending our Summer 2020 Request for Application Seminar. Before we get started on the information, we'd like to get an idea of who's in our audience today. So we have a poll question. Have you ever applied or contributed to an application for HSR&D funding? Heidi, would you run the poll for us, please?
Sure, that poll is open. Responses are coming in. I'm just waiting a few more moments, and then we'll go through the responses here. Okay, looks like we're slowing down, so I'm going to close this out. And what we're seeing is 83% of the audience saying yes, they have, and 17% no. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. This is great. That really helps us focus on what we're going to talk about today. So we have another poll. Have you ever applied or have you ever, what's your role in the VA if you're an investigator, coordinator, project manager, analyst, if you're ACOS, AO, or other research leadership, operational leadership, or staff, or other?
And responses are coming in. Again, we'll give everyone a few more moments to respond before we close the poll and go through the results. And it looks like we're slowing down here, so I'm going to close this out. And what we're seeing is 62% of the audience saying investigator, 24% coordinator, project manager, analyst, 10% ACOS, AO, or other research leadership, 5% operations leadership or staff, and 0 other. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. That's very helpful. Now I'd like to turn the seminar over to David Atkins, our HSR&D director, to give us some initial information.
Thanks. I'm just going to talk briefly to two slides. The first is all of you, I'm sure, are affected in varying ways by the COVID outbreak and are wondering how it may affect our applications, our review process, et cetera. And I just want to remind people that there is a SharePoint site. You have to access that from within VA, but that has up-to-the-minute information about what we're doing in terms of research, about solicitations related to COVID, and any other sort of news. If you have specific questions, if it's about managing your own projects, please send them to your SPM. But if it's specifically about a COVID-type research idea, send it to the email address there. In addition, we are going to be sending out a weekly summary of important information out to all HSR&D investigators. You should have gotten the first of those on Friday. One question that we get repeatedly is, are we thinking about delaying our submission deadlines to accommodate the fact that many of you have had your work interrupted either by the research suspension, by being pulled into clinical duties, by having to be home with your children? There's a limit to what we can do in our schedule in terms of delaying things. We are currently discussing the possibility of some modest delay in the submission deadline, and we will be communicating that back out to the field shortly. So I cannot make any promise now. We are going to bend as far as we can to accommodate the difficulties you're facing, but we want to make sure we don't suspend our semi-annual review process. We need to keep the pipeline of research going. Hopefully, we'll be through this by the summer, and people will be able to get started back up again, and we don't want to get too much further behind. Next slide. So what I didn't mention, but one of the things that will be discussed is COVID rapid response solicitation. I think that's, Kathy, am I right? Is that going to be covered in this, this is a solicitation that's already out on the street?
Yes.
It has a short timeline, but it's also going to, in the sense that we are going to review the first projects when they come in early, but it's going to remain open. But this is a summary of the other sort of research priorities, just to remind people that we have priorities that are organized around sort of health system area and clinical area, like women's health and mental health, opioids, pain. But we also have priorities that cut across HSR&D methods and priorities related to specific legislation that has influenced what VA is focusing on. Most recently, the Mission Act, which has expanded community options for care in the community. And then lastly, these on the bottom are the three priorities of the Office of Research and Development that relate to access to high-quality trials, increasing the impact of VA research, and putting VA data to work for veterans. The last two of those are very relevant to health services research, of course. And I'm going to be turning it back to Kathy to take us out.
Thank you, David. So we're going to go on to what's new this round. First thing that we'd like you to be aware of is that the ITS window has been modified this round. The opening date has changed. Another thing that's new is we are not offering the Nursing Research Initiative this round, but we have two new RFAs for social determinants of health and one on COVID-19 that David just mentioned. The randomized program evaluation will be taking resubmissions only, and then we have some updates within RFA sections. So we also have updates from Cerner. As you know, Cerner is expected to be rolled out soon. This is the latest information that we have, that it is expected to be going live this summer. So in designing your studies, we'd like you to be aware that the transition has potential implications for data availability, and consider ways that you wish to mitigate that data disruption impact on your research. We'd also like you to know that we consider the Cerner information very carefully, but it is not factored into scoring during the scientific review. We don't want that to impact the scientific merit of an application, since this is out of your hands. If you have questions about any of the Cerner information, the links, the blue text on the slide provides links to information on the Cerner process. And also, if you have questions for the work group, you can email them at the address that's listed on this page. So the RFAs that HSR&D is offering this for the summer are listed on this page. We have the parent, the pilot, which is at $200,000 and 18 months, similar to last round. We have the targeted suicide, the social determinants of health, the resubmissions for the randomized program evaluation. We have implementation research projects. We continue to have the Mentored Research Award, the Career Development Award, and the Historically Black Colleges and Universities Research Training Program. And finally, we have the new COVID-19 Rapid Response Project. Before we get into those, we'd like to talk about eligibility. Of course, to be eligible for funding, you have to have an MD or PhD or the equivalent.
and have a 5/8 appointment or have one at the time of funding. All VA medical centers, and you have to be at a medical center with an active research program and be registered as an applicant or if it's registered as an applicant organization and grant above any area of common before the...
Kathy, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
It's like you moved your phone away from your mouth. We can't understand what you're saying right now.
Okay, sorry.
Much better. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, as I was saying, you need to be at a medical research program with an active research program, and each in the medical center has to be registered as an applicant organization. We are accepting waivers for eligibility or off-site waivers if they meet the criteria that are listed in the program guides. We also are accepting waivers for exceeding duration, budget cap, or IPAs, but all waivers have to be received by May 15th. If the waiver is approved, the waiver approval letter from HSRD must be included in the letters of support section. So I mentioned intent to submit with a new window. It's highlighted here. We will open the ITS on April 24th, and it will go until May 8th. Applications that did fail to submit an ITS are not accepted or reviewed. For the mentored research awards, they have to have an approved letter of intent or a letter of intent that's under review to submit an ITS. And that award program requires both to submit. We use the ITS to determine panels, so an abstract that describes the project well will assist in that assignment. So please provide a thorough description of your project so that we make sure that we can assign it properly. I'd also like you to note that the query ITS window differs from the rest of HSR&D. So, and their ITS window is listed on the slide. One thing that we notice is on the RFA requirements is that sometimes people don't follow everything that the requirements of the RFA. We ask you to really read the RFA to make sure that you have the information submitted correctly and include everything. And one of the required formats that we find the applicants don't follow regularly is the abstract format. It's really important that you follow this abstract format because we need the information that is included. So, and we expect all the applications to follow the directions in the templates in the RFAs. Some notable sections in the RFAs are, the first is patient experience and veteran engagement. Engagement is an important component of health services research, and we anticipate that applicants will seek input from patients and veterans in designing their studies. One of the most frequent issues with clinical trials is meeting recruitment goals. Please thoroughly consider your study population and calculations. Carefully explain how you derived your estimates, check on competing studies for that population at the sites, and propose mitigation strategies if there are recruitment lags. Implementation and dissemination. HSR&D wants research that they fund to improve the veterans that we serve. But if an HSR&D-derived intervention doesn't get implemented, then we haven't really reached that goal. We want your studies to make an impact. If your plan is just to disseminate your results in manuscripts and to partners, that's insufficient. We're looking for applications that explicitly discuss the next steps after the project's completed. what's the path that's going to make a difference in DA care? The investigator needs to consider who owns the problem. The study is attempting to solve. How will the product of their research be sustained without research funds? What are the potential barriers to the implementation and how to overcome them? Who will be the partner to implement the project? We encourage the use of hybrid designs. Studies of intervention should consider how they can collect information relevant to implementation during the efficacy and effectiveness study. In addition, we need to compress the cycle of understanding the problem, testing interventions, and scaling solutions. Now, I'd like to turn this over to Naomi Tamayasu, our Deputy Director, to present the RFAs.
Well, good morning, everybody, or good afternoon, depending on which part of the country you're in. I'm going to go over many of the RFAs very quickly because based on the poll, it sounds like you are all experienced at submitting applications to us. So I'm just going to briefly go over them and highlight the key features, including any changes that might have occurred from the prior merit award cycle. And at the very end, if you have any specific questions, and I'm sure many of you have already looked at the RFAs from prior years or had questions for this year, our entire team or most of our team will be available to answer any of your questions. So I'm going to start with the parent IIR award. There hasn't been many changes except for some of the cross-cutting changes that Kathy just mentioned. The parent IIR has still a budget max of $1.2 million, and it's for 4 years. And as David and others have already mentioned, HSRD has identified priority areas that should always be considered in developing research proposals. And on your screen, if you like more details on our research priorities, you can always go to that that link for more information. Next slide, please. Okay, so the pilots also have not changed. They are still for $200,000 max, and it's up to 18 months. We strongly encourage those that are seriously considering pilots to ensure in your proposals that the pilot goals and the next steps are very, very clear. Clearly, it's not a lot of money, and it's not for a long time. So be very clear in terms of how you intend to strengthen the evidence for larger studies. If you're looking to get preliminary data for full scale proposals, i.e. effect size, be very, very clear about that. If you're interested in establishing feasibility of objectives or methods such as recruitment or implementation issues, this is an ideal RFA to apply to. And also if you're exploring novel ideas or approaches through a small scale study, a pilot is the most appropriate avenue for obtaining funds to explore new approaches. And although for many pilots it is essentially to strengthen the evidence for larger studies for IIR, pilots can also be used for innovative studies that may not be designed specifically to lead to IIRs. You should always be careful in your application to align the goals that's appropriate for pilot work. If you're testing the sample size, if you're looking for effect size, i.e. the treatment effectiveness versus the feasibility, be very clear about that. Sometimes if you have a small effect size, you may need to collect a large sample, and the feasibility of recruiting a large number for a pilot may not be feasible or appropriate given the timeline and the funding level. And one more thing, I think for many of you who have already applied to pilots, only one resubmission is permitted. Okay, you can go to the targeted suicide. So we've been very, very fortunate in that the last couple of years, We started putting out SDRs to focus on suicide prevention among veterans, since it is a high priority within the VA. And last year, we combined two RFAs specifically focused on suicide prevention. But last year and for this year, we have combined two of those SDRs. One was what I consider more of a general suicide prevention RFA, and then the other was focused on the transition period, veterans who are at high risk for suicide during the first year following their discharge from military status. I won't read through all of the, the high-risk groups. These are just suggested groups that we're recommending in the RFA this year as well. But we're particularly interested in high-risk groups, for example, transitioning veterans who are being discharged from the military, those that have already made a suicide attempt, or who are experiencing financial difficulties. And internally, we were talking about, the impact of COVID and the economic consequences of this might lead to, unfortunately, greater suicidality given the financial difficulties. And then we're also always interested in patients with chronic pain, as well as those who are becoming homeless or are homeless. We're interested in veterans, older veterans, women veterans, and homeless veterans. And also, we have been very interested and have actually been very, very pleased that more and more applications are coming in focusing on lethal means, since this is an area of research that in the past there have been gaps. And we're also interested, again, in those who are not receiving VHA care. Many of you know in this area that out of the 22 suicides per day, 14 are veterans who are actually not receiving VHA care at this moment. And, of course, we added those that are less than dishonorable discharge as a group that is not that is at high risk. And again, we're trying to combine, the focus could be on observational studies, effectiveness studies. It could be related to community level studies. We're pretty open to a variety of different areas and mechanisms. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so this is social determinants of health. I was in California at the time, but I listened in and tried to speak during the great cyber seminar that was held for social determinants of health. Kudos to Dr. Alexandra Fellini-Newhouse and Dave Atkins. We're very excited about this because for about 2 years, at least internally, we've been trying to put out an RFA focused principally on social determinants of health. Many applications, not many, but some applications have been focused on this in the past, but we're very, very pleased that we're able to release an RFA specifically on this so that then we can then dedicate possibly a separate panel to review these hopefully good ideas that will come to improve access to social determinants of health services. The RFA is split into two types of awards. One is the merit review. It's up to 4 years. The budget cannot exceed beyond $1.2 million. But it also includes, for those who are interested, in conducting pilots related to social determinants of health. And like the regular generic pilots, they're up to 18 months, the budget not to exceed $200,000. Again, this is to generate data to establish feasibility for an IIR as a next step, or it can be used to develop new partnerships with an outside organization, and it can be used to answer a question of high value or immediate significance to a clinical or operations partner. And if you're interested, for those of you who missed the cyber seminar, there is a link on the slide. And I highly suggest it because it was, at least from my ears, it was very, very good. And I hope that many people apply to that. So the next slide, please. Okay, so this is the randomized program evaluation phased award. The original intent of this RPE, phased award, was to solicit innovative new research utilizing randomized program evaluations to study the impact of new policies and programs on patient care and veteran experience. This we are going to be phasing out the RPE award and routing them to essentially existing alternative funding opportunities such as planning awards, pilots, and the IIR. And so this is the last opportunity or last cycle for RPEs moving forward. As I mentioned, it does not mean that you cannot submit anything related to or involving RPEs, but they'll be forwarded to existing alternative routes of funding. The planning RPE is again for $50,000 for 9 months. It must be a planning RPE to submit full application within 1 year of receiving planning funds. And the evaluation planning activities could include things like literature reviews, specification of study design, survey development, analyses, randomization planning with partners, or whatever else is needed in order to conduct planning activities in preparation for the submission of the full RPE application. And the full application, again, it's for resubmissions only. It is up to $1,150,000 for 4 years. And the expectation is that, as I mentioned before, that the RPE Phase 2 or full application must be submitted within 1 year of receiving the planning awards. So please, for all of you who have submitted something in the past to this RFA, this is the final opportunity to submit or resubmit your Phase 1 or Phase 2 applications. Next slide, please. Okay, and then the implementation research projects. Some of you have apply to this. The objective of this implementation research project award is essentially to support the development and pilot testing of specific implementation strategies in preparation for a fully powered hybrid implementation research study. And funds can be used to support implementation strategies that educate or coach staff in how to adapt or apply the clinical intervention and to consult with or mentor other VA employees or investigators in the implementation strategy development and testing. It is not meant to support the actual implementation or deliver the actual clinical intervention, but it will support educational planning activities to prepare existing VA employees to be ready to implement and will become knowledgeable about the clinical intervention. Like the RPE, there will be no resubmissions with the implementation research projects. You can continue to submit, but these will all be treated like new awards. And I think I mentioned this, it's up to $200,000 max for up to 18 months. Okay, so now I'm going to turn it over to Emily. Who will present some information regarding the COVID-19 rapid response projects. Emily, switch it over.
Hi.
To you.
Okay. Can we go to the next slide, please? Hi. Go to the next slide, please. Okay, thanks. So as Naomi said, HSR&D released a rapid response funding announcement, and this is intended to jumpstart research efforts related to COVID-19 by supporting a variety of activities, and this includes planning projects such as preparatory to research activities, short-term pilots, as well as data analysis projects. Now, these are supposed to be small-scale projects that would align with the sort of work that is traditionally funded by HSR&D, so we're not looking for clinical trials, testing new treatments or methods of diagnosis. There's a more general Office of Research and Development effort looking for ideas on that. But these small-scale projects should focus on quality, access, and cost of care, as I said, the typical sorts of projects that HSR&D funds. These projects are not subject to the administrative hold on research. They also should not interfere with the work that our operations partners and clinical partners are doing right now with COVID. So please do not reach out to the VA clinical operations leaders or national program offices. You should, however, discuss plans with the local facilities, including your associate chief of staff for research, to avoid undue imposition on clinical systems. But please note, formal letters of support are not required. As for the timeline, so this will be a rolling sort of funding announcement. So the first submissions are due Monday, April 6th. Decisions will be announced by May 1st. And then after that, subsequent applications will be reviewed on a rolling basis through July 1st. So if you miss the April 6th deadline, the next batch of review would occur in early May. We do it on a monthly basis. Projects are expected to start as soon as feasible after award. And then in terms of the application itself, you do not need to submit anything in advance. You just need to submit your application to us by April 6th, or if you're going to aim for a subsequent date, that's fine too. But the first batch, as I said, is due Monday, April 6th. The application consists of a concept paper, which is 3 pages laying out significance of the work, what you plan to do, your data sources, your research team, and your management plan. We also ask that you provide a summary budget table and budget justification. The budget should be well justified with respect to the proposed work and what you can realistically spend within 9 months of funding. So these are a maximum duration of 9 months of award. We estimate that most projects would be in the neighborhood of $25,000 to $100,000, although there is no minimum or maximum budget, but it should be justified by the scope of work. And these applications should be submitted by the PI's VA research office, and they're submitted to the email address listed below, which is also listed in the RFA, and questions about this funding announcement can also be directed to that email address.
Thank you, Emily. So the next award is the Mentored Research Award for Career Development. And this has a narrative that has a limit of 14 pages. As I mentioned at the beginning of the seminar, the letters of intent deadline is April 15th. The letters of intent are reviewed acceptance and an intent to submit is also required for those submitting an application this round. And the link to that ART website is listed on the slide. The award has not changed. It offers up to 5 years of salary support. We are looking for candidate training experience and accomplishments, and they need a career plan and a mentoring plan. The historically Black College and University Research Training Program Award is also a mentored research program, and it requires a letter of intent with a deadline of April 15th, which are reviewed for acceptance, and an ITS. These require a VA primary mentor and an HBCU co-mentor, and the nominee has to have attended an HBCU or have a faculty appointment at an HBCU institution. The application follows the CDA 2 application format. We're looking at career planning, mentoring planning, and the candidate's training and experience. So just to emphasize our calendar, on April 15th, the CDA's letters of intent are due. On April 24th, the ITS opens, and this, and it's the CDA ITS deadline. We have our ITS closing. The waivers are on May 15th for a deadline. Grants.gov opens on May 15th. And down to the wire submissions are on June 10th, with the last submission date on grants.gov on June 12th and verification on June 15th. And a scientific review will be held in August. So now we come to questions. If you have questions, you can put them in the box. But if you find that you have questions that aren't covered, you are welcome to contact any of the email addresses on this page, or to if you need additional information. So, Heidi, do we have any questions now?
We do have a couple, three pending questions right now. I'll just start at the top for our audience. We do have some time for questions here. If you do have any questions, please take this opportunity. You can type your questions into the questions box. That's in that dashboard on the right-hand side of your screen. The first question that we have here, do HSR&D priorities get greater weight than ORD or larger VA priorities? The last couple of rounds, I have seen critiques that ding the investigators because of lack of perceived ties to HSR&D specific priorities.
Naomi, would you like to answer that one?
Yeah, and also I'll leave it up to David to follow up. Yeah, we actually do try to follow all of the priorities, but in particular, because it's health services research, we do look specifically at the priority list for HSR&D. But the overall ORD-wide priorities, as is listed in, I think, slide 5, we do also fund those areas, but it should be applied to health services research or health services type activities.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yep. Are we okay to move on to the next question, or do we want to add anything to that?
I think we're fine.
Okay, thank you. The next question here, given the emphasis on what are next steps and who is the operations entity that will use the results of the study, are studies that look at more basic topics earlier in the pipeline, for example, understanding a phenomenon before the intervention stage, no longer considered desirable?
Can I take that one?
Yes,
sure.
Yeah, no, so we we are interested in basic research describing a problem. I think the key is to understand sort of where we are in the along the continuum of knowledge about an issue. So if you have something that's a new problem where we really don't know what's going on, then some studies that look at a more descriptive approach or exploratory where you don't really have something that you could identify a particular partner may be appropriate. But for problems that we already have a fairly good understanding, we want to push our investigators to not rediscover the wheel, but to try to figure out how do you actually get solutions into practice. The second point is we do also support basic methodological research. And so one of the cross-cutting priorities is on basic health system methods, understanding how to build better predictive models, how to understand variation in the healthcare, things that may have a broader scope and not necessarily be so applied or necessarily have a single partner. But it's important to, in your application, to sort of make the case about how what you are learning, what could eventually be translated into improvements in the health system. But I think your question is a very important one, because sometimes if we're too early in the stage, it's really too early to decide what particular partner is going to be interested in our research.
Great, thank you. The next question here, could you please tell us the budget size of the COVID-19 rapid response projects?
Yes, so there is no minimum or no maximum budget for the COVID rapid response project. That said, the budget funding period is 9 months in duration. You should be prepared to be able to spend whatever you request in that period. It should be aligned with the scope of the work that you propose. And we're estimating that most projects will be between $25,000 to $100,000 in the amount of funding they request, although there could be exceptions. These are not intended to be full-scale HSR&D projects such as IIRs.
And just to second Emily's point, we're interested in trying to hit the ground running. We're obviously interested in spending whatever money we can by October 1, although we did allow for funding to continue past October 1. And we're interested in generating some information that can be useful back to the system. We realize we're not going to, you know, generate information that's going to be helpful during the continuing peak of this crisis, but I don't think any of us expect it to completely disappear, you know, after June. And so we want to encourage investigators to think about how can they do as much as possible as fast as possible.
Great, thank you. The next question here, regarding veteran centricity, there are some topics that are not important to VA priorities. I'm sorry, that are important to VA priorities, but not necessarily especially veteran-centric, such as physician burnout. How to best discuss this in your application?
Naomi, do you want to take that?
Well, okay. I was going to ask the same thing, but so the question was on veteran burnout or provider burnout?
Sessions that are not exactly veteran-centric.
Okay.
And that's like an example of something that would not be veteran-centric.
Okay. Well, I sort of honed in on the example that the caller mentioned, provider burnout. We actually are very interested in the experiences of the providers as well, because they are part of the health system. And we actually do fund non-veteran-centric type research, including, you know, factors that contribute to provider burnout. So it's not the most, prevalent type of research, but if a proposal comes in that that's innovative and that actually addresses a key need among non-veterans, specifically providers, we're very much open to it.
Yeah, and I'll just add to Naomi's comments. So it doesn't have to be veteran exclusive. Mm-hmm. And so something like provider burnout is obviously not exclusive to the VA, but it certainly, as Naomi said, relevant to the VA. I do think you want to think of for when you're studying topics that also occur outside the VA, you want to make a case about why VA is a particularly good place to be able to study it. Doesn't have to be the only place it could be studied, but there are many questions that because of the kind of health system we are and the kind of data we have, that even though it might be an issue that's also of interest to NIH, we're actually in a very good position to study it. I think there are cases where if an issue does not have any unique aspect to either veterans or the VA delivery system, and there are other major funders doing a lot of work in it, that will, you know, lower it in our priority view when we're thinking about it. So burnout is certainly, to take just that specific example, I think you can easily make the case about why that issue is important to the VA, even though it's not exclusive to the VA, and why the VA is a very good place to study it, because we have the all-employee survey, which really allows you to study a problem on a much larger scale than in other systems. If you were studying a diabetes quality improvement intervention, you know, that could be in a small number of clinics. That's a little harder to say what's your unique advantage compared to doing that on an NIH grant in a university clinic system.
Great, thank you. The next question here. How has ORD or HSR&D coordinated with national program offices regarding the COVID-19 rapid response projects? I imagine many projects will impact local or regional sites. Are national program offices aware of this RFA and have they signed on? My own research is in long-term care. I worry, for example, that research in or about CLCs may be proposed that is not in line with the current desires of the Office of Geriatrics and Extended Care. How can such potential problems be avoided?
So we have been in close contact with the clinical leads for the COVID response, which are being led by Jill Francis, and there are three separate tracks for emergency medicine, inpatient medicine, and ICU care. You're raising an important other area, which is long-term care that we have not been as regular and frequent contact. So I think while we have advised against deluging our busy clinical partners for letters of support, in part to spare them, I do think the questioner raises an important question that you want to be studying something that won't be viewed as a complete non-starter by the people who are in charge of clinical programs. And so I guess what I would encourage you, we don't want you flooding letters to the head of the Geriatrics Extended Care in D.C., you know, working with your local CLCs and showing that you understand the clinical environment is certainly appropriate. We want people to take advantage of their understanding of the local clinical situations to show that, you know, the idea you're studying, that the research you're doing can actually be safely conducted in the current environment, that the local partners are likely to be able to get on board, even as we, at the same time, we're sort of discouraging too many people trying to, you know, email the, you know, single people in D.C. with a flood of questions. So I hope that sort of answered your question, but feel free to email Naomi and me. This is an RFA that's staying open, and I think we have the opportunity to refine it as we get more specific feedback from our partners about what research is compatible with their current approach.
And if I could also add, David, to what you said, I think you pretty much said the most salient points. Before you submit an application to COVID-19, the rapid response, we really do encourage you, before you even put down one word even, to talk to, at least to get a sense of what's going on in your facility. It is possible that if it requires a change in the process or the existing protocol, the providers there may not be able to participate, may not be able to implement, may not be able to do contribute to any research ideas that you might have at this point because they might be too swamped. So we always ask, and I think you are asking your providers and working with your ACOs to figure out if that is. If that's an idea that is feasible at this time.
Great, thank you. The next question here, can you discuss in more detail the decision not to extend the grant deadlines given the COVID disruption, particularly for clinician investigators?
So I think the problem we run up against is that there are a series of sort of domino effects. If we delay the submission this time and we move back the review, we have our reviews are planned a year in advance. People, our reviewers, have locked them into our calendar. And so it's very hard to move the review date without causing a whole cascade. And if you can't move the review date, we actually have a much shorter time between submission and review than, say, NIH does with their 3 times a year calendar. We want to keep the same number of RFAs per year open. We want to get research proposals. We recognize we probably may take a hit in terms of the number submitted this round. And as I mentioned at the outset, we are going to try to see how far we could extend the submission deadline and still keep to our review calendar. But I think it's only going to be a matter of a couple of weeks that we could squeeze out of that. But the problem is we don't want to then have to move subsequent review sessions there. So we are going to be talking about this with the COIN directors this week, and I'm certainly, open to feedback, and we've discussed it pretty seriously within our group for the, I think we recognize the concerns that are behind that question, because it's, and I would say it's not just clinician investigators. Everybody's been disrupted by this, and I think if you're a PhD who suddenly is at home trying to work on a slow internet connection and you've got several young children at home, that's a huge hit to your productivity. So we will have more to fill you in by the end of the week. It's just that it's very difficult, and Liza may want to comment a little more because she's really in charge of our review calendar and working with our contractors. The other problem is we share contractors with 3 other research services, and their work is carefully sort of allocated throughout the calendar. And once you start moving dates around, you run into problems that we don't have enough support staff to process applications because they're beginning to prepare for the next cycle of the other review services. So we may just have to catch up on, the next review cycle. And if there are things we can do beyond, pushing dates to unmanageable things in terms of allowing some leeway in terms of number of submissions or other aspects, we're happy to consider it. So if you have specific suggestions, please send them to me and Naomi.
Great, thank you. The next question here, if the COVID budget exceeds that expectation of $100,000 max, do we need to run it by VACO first?
No, that's just a general guideline. We had no maximum budget cap in the RFA, but people were asking for some guidance for ballpark.
Okay, thank you. The next question here. We are looking at collecting data generated by face-to-face patient visits, but patients will not be having many face-to-face visits in the next several months. Will this be a mark against at the time of grant review, assuming all is not back to normal by then?
No. The grant review is going to be in August. Decisions will be made in September. Projects that are funded are not going to start until the beginning of 2021. So I think we view this the way we view the Cerner transition. You know, we can't predict exactly how things are going to play out. When it gets down to actual decisions about starting the work, we'll have conversations with investigators about whether they really can start their work. But it won't be part of the review criteria because it's just too hard to predict what's going to happen. We certainly hope we'll be past the worst of it by the time any of these projects that are being submitted will be beginning. If I'm assuming that question was not, I wasn't clear if that question was specific to COVID. If it was specific to COVID, I would say the same rules apply. I mean, we would like to get projects started as fast as possible. But if you're really planning to study face-to-face interactions in the COVID environment, I think that might be a problem because those aren't mostly going away across the system. But I answered that question assuming it was not specific to a COVID project.
Okay, great. Thank you. The next question here, please clarify closing date for CDA LOIs.
Do you want me to take this, David?
Yes, please.
Okay. The CDA LOI deadline is April 15th, but I can be that is something that I can be. We can be some flexible, a little flexible on. I try to get them reviewed by the first week in March in order to give people a chance to turn around, and take the advice and do their proposal, the feedback, and do their proposals. But the proposal deadline is it opens on kind of mid-May, or it opens in May and it goes through June. So there's a window there. So basically, if anyone doesn't feel that they can get their LOI to me by the 15th, just, drop me send me an email or leave me a message to let me know to expect it. And I can probably extend it at least maybe 2 weeks. Does that answer the question?
Hopefully we'll send in a clarifying question if it did not quite answer it. And the last question here, are the bio sketches going to change since I think the date on top is 5/2020?
Liza, do you want to take that or Kathy?
Kitchen on the line.
It is, but I was hoping Liza could answer.
I'm not sure I understand what the question. What are they talking about? The template? Could you repeat the question? I'm sorry, Heidi.
That's not a problem. The question is: are the bio sketches going to change? Since I think the date on the top is 5/2020.
I'm not aware. I think, unless Tipton, is there a new version of the NIH biosketch template required in this round?
Not that I have been told, but any changes will be made around the 15th, middle of May. So if there is something, we will know and everything will be updated.
Yeah, so I guess that's the best answer we can provide. I'm not aware that they've changed either, but like Tiffin said, if something changes, we'll let people know when the grants.gov window opens.
Okay, that is all of the questions that I have at this time. I'm not sure if anyone has any closing remarks you'd like to make before we close the session out.
I'd like to thank you again for your attendance, and we hope that we have addressed all your questions. And if not, please feel free to send additional questions to the email addresses listed on this slide. And we hope that you stay safe, and we appreciate your efforts and hope to review your application soon. Thank you very much for your attendance.